It's Tuesday, November 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, President-elect Trump announces his first cabinet selections to mixed reviews.
China wants to establish a new type of major power relationship with the United States, avoiding confrontation.
China looks ahead to the Trump presidency. Also, the president-elect faces multiple issues in Europe. Financial markets rally behind Trump, and growing your own food without a garden. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has presented a clash of visions with his first White House appointments, naming a consummate Washington insider as his chief of staff and a populist hard-right insurgent as his chief strategist. Days after his stunning upset victory, the Republican president-elect on Sunday picked Reince Priebus, the party's national chairman and a familiar face in the national capital's political battles, to lead his staff, a reassuring choice for many of the Republican leaders who control Congress. At the same time, Trump named Steve Bannon as his campaign chief executive, as his top strategist, and before joining the campaign in its final months, Bannon headed the Breitbart News website, which he once described as the platform of the alt-right, an anti-establishment platform that occasionally has been home to white nationalist and anti-Semitic vitriol. Bannon's appointment drew immediate attacks from some Republicans and those outside the government. At the White House Monday, President Obama gave his first press conference since the election, and he shed some light on his meeting with President-elect Trump last week.
I have been encouraged by his statements on election night about the need for unity and his interest in being the president for all people, and that how he staffs, the first steps he takes, the first impressions he makes, the reset that can happen after an election, all those things are important and should be thought about. And I think it's important to give him the room and the space to do that. It takes time to put that together. But I emphasize to him that, look, in an election like this that was so hotly contested and so divided, gestures matter. And how he reaches out to groups that may not have supported him, how he signals his interest in their issues or concerns. I think those are the kinds of things that can set a tone that will help move things forward once he's actually taken office.
Since winning the U.S. presidential election, Republican Donald Trump has softened his rhetoric, sparking questions about whether he will fulfill his campaign promises. And he also has praised his Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton, and her husband, former President Bill Clinton, as well as President Obama. The president-elect answered some of these questions in an interview with the CBS television network, which aired Sunday. Slotika Hoke reports.
Trump's unexpected victory has sparked protests in major American cities, and more are planned for January to coincide with his inauguration day.
What I think a protest like this can do is send a message to others in the country who are upset with this new president, and also internationally, that Americans don't support his racist, sexist agenda.
Trump hastened to point out that his former political opponents have offered their support. In an interview for the CBS TV program 60 Minutes, he described the Clintons as a talented family whom he would consider asking for advice. He reaffirmed his intention to erect a wall along the border with Mexico, but conceded that in certain areas it would only be a fence.
Certain areas the wall is more appropriate. I'm very good at this. It's called construction.
Republicans in Congress have made it clear they're not assembling a force to deport an estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants, as Trump has promised to do. In the 60 Minutes interview, he insisted that some of them will be deported.
What we are going to do is get the people that are criminal and have criminal records, gang members, drug dealers. We have a lot of these people, probably 2 million, it could even be 3 million. We're getting them out of our country or we're going to incarcerate. But we're getting them out of our country. They're here illegally. after the border is secured and after everything gets normalized, we're going to make a determination on the people that you're talking about, who are terrific people.
Former presidential candidate Senator Bernie Sanders said Democrats must start a grassroots movement to fight for what is right.
There is no rational reason why we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. No rational reason why we are the only major nation on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people.
Trump said he would repeal President Obama's signature health care program, but replace it simultaneously with another one that retains some of the provisions from so-called Obamacare. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And there's so much more during this presidential transition period that you'll find on our website at voanews.com. Well, there's something else other than the big election results. We turn now to our next segment to check out what people are saying on the web. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is right here in Studio 22 to fill us in. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
So, what's the big buzz?
Hashtag Supermoon is definitely a buzz worldwide, and you can find photos of the brightest moon in 68 years on various social media platforms. What it is that the moon becomes full on the same day it is closest to Earth, so it looks super big in your eyes.
Absolutely. It was large out there last night. Mm-hmm. So where were the photos taken?
So I'm not sure if the curated tweets are based on the user's location, but at least for me, the photos were mostly taken within the United States. Fox News shared a photo of the moon rising behind the U.S. Marine Corps War Memorial, and the U.S. Department of Interior shared one taken at a ranch in California.
Okay, I'm sure there were some personal accounts as well.
Not very many, actually. You can detect a supermoon with your own eyes, but as you know, I know you're a good photographer, it's very hard to capture it while using most smartphones, which is how most people take photos these days, and this tweet captures the disappointment and frustration people felt when you can see supermoon but don't have super lens.
Okay. What else is trending?
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and his cat. Assange has been holed up at the Ecuadorian embassy in London for the past 4 years, and during that time, he got a cat, which is a very good use of your time, in my opinion. Incidentally, the cat has a Twitter account, @embassycat. Swedish prosecutors visited Assange at the embassy on Monday over his rape charges, but the big takeaway from the meeting was that the cat was wearing a tie. Twitter users are saying if Assange dressed up the cat to take attention away from the prosecutor's visit, it was an incredibly silly move, which worked.
All right, I have to ask, what did the cat look like?
The cat was wearing a red and white necktie while looking out the window very pensively. Jim, back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, G. And appropriately, you're wearing a very nice feline print
That's
today.
That's right. Leopard.
You can follow our program's account on Twitter at @VOA_IE. I'm out there at VOA Stevenson, and G is at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia. Donald Trump expected to take tough but brief action in South China Sea. President Xi tells Trump U.S.-China cooperation is key. Former U.S. envoy says don't expect strategic patience on North Korea from Trump. Malaysian opposition lawmaker jailed for exposing 1MDB audit. Strong aftershocks hit New Zealand following a strong earthquake. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the voanews.com website. And be sure to follow us, if you have a smartphone, by using our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Chinese President Xi Jinping phoned President-elect Donald Trump, telling him cooperation is the only right choice in U.S.-China relations. Chinese state media on Monday reported both men agreed to maintain close contact, establish a good working relationship, and hold an early meeting. During the U.S. political campaign, Mr. Trump, citing China's huge trade imbalance with the United States, accused Beijing of unfair trade practices, including currency manipulation and threatened tariffs on Chinese products. China analyst and retired City University of Hong Kong professor Joseph Cheng tells VOA's Victor Beatty, Trump's election has injected uncertainty into bilateral relations at a time when China's economy is slowing.
Chinese leaders since the Ronald Reagan campaign in 1980 have been trying to avoid commenting on election campaigns, as well as not to make any guesses, any assessments. And this practice has even been followed by Beijing's mainstream foreign policy think tank researchers. Chinese leaders argue that whatever is being said by the politicians and the campaigns are not important because once they assume the position of president, they have to face the reality. They have to handle Sino-American relations carefully. Basically, President Xi is repeating his fundamental nine that China wants to have good relations with the United States, that China wants to establish a new type of major power relationship with the United States, avoiding confrontations, emphasizing on mutual interests, and trying to manage their differences, their disputes.
Do you think that they view Mr. Trump as different from President Obama?
The foreign policy think tanks during the election campaign informally indicated that they also face a very difficult choice. On one hand, they perceived Hillary Clinton as a Cold War warrior, and it was expected that she might even be tougher, more hawkish in the United States policy of trying to contain China or balancing towards Asia, pivoting towards the Asia-Pacific region, and so on. And on the other hand, they see Donald Trump as an unknown figure, rather unpredictable. Certainly, at this moment, Chinese leaders would like President-elect Donald Trump to realize the significance of maintaining at least a correct, if not a cordial, relationship with China, avoiding measures that would be seen as provocative towards Beijing, like labeling China as a currency manipulator, imposing duties on China's imports, and so on.
Joseph Cheng said Chinese foreign policy analysts are optimistic over what they see as the more isolationist views of Mr. Trump, resulting in a lessening of U.S. security commitments to Japan and South Korea. However, he said China is concerned over the perception of rising protectionism in the United States at a time when the Chinese economy remains dependent on foreign trade. Mr. Trump on the campaign trail has been critical of Europe's defense contributions to the NATO alliance, as well as the Iran nuclear agreement, climate change policy, and trade agreements. The two sides are currently negotiating the Free Trade Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. Foreign affairs analyst Jonathan Adelman, a University of Denver professor, tells VOA division is likely involving three of the four issues, including the Iran nuclear agreement.
There's an irony here, and the irony is that Donald Trump has made very clear, and I heard him give a talk earlier this year, that he wants to get rid of the nuclear deal. But the problem is that the United States, technically, since much of it was executive order, could do a fair amount of that by themselves. However, the deal includes European countries and Russia, and they may well not want to do what the United States wants to do. So that's going to be very problematic. The United States may find itself not necessarily alone, but not doing it together with the EU. Defense, I think, is the one area of the four that I think we can get an agreement, an easy agreement. Because the problem is the Europeans as a whole are spending far less than 2% of their GNP on defense, and they are duplicating each other. So in other words, they don't have capability to project power at any significant distance. Donald Trump would like to see the Europeans pay more for what the Americans are doing, but also be stronger than they currently are in dealing with problems in the Middle East and potentially Russia, which of course could get in the way of what he wants to do with the Russians.
Jonathan Adelman said with the selection of Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus as Donald Trump's chief of staff, he expects pragmatism and negotiation will carry the day over ideology on these issues. Financial markets remain at or near all-time highs thanks to a post-election rally. We find out more about this so-called Trump effect from financial correspondent Jill Malandrino in New York.
Well, it certainly has been a spectacular ride over the past week with the surprise win of Donald Trump taking the presidency. And we saw that continue this morning with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones Industrial Average hitting record highs. And mostly because it's sectors that are representative of Donald Trump's policy of repatriating assets back to the U.S. and deregulation. So we're seeing strength in financials. We're seeing strength in the industrial sector as infrastructure growth is part of his initiative. Healthcare has rebounded as well. One interesting area that has not been performing well is the tech sector. Part of the reason is due to repatriation, where Trump wants to bring back assets into the U.S., and a lot of tech companies have multiple operations overseas. So we're seeing what traders call on Wall Street, FANG, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. They've all taken hits. That's part of the reason why. Another part is they're expensive from a valuation perspective, clearly capital intensive, but there are, you could get better deals on the street in the financials, in the industrial area that have more attractive valuation. So what we're really seeing with this rally, it's more sector rotation than anything else.
And with the financials going up, we also have ahead of us in a couple of weeks a possible Fed decision on interest rates.
Yeah, on December 14th, we're going to find out whether or not they're going to hike rates. There's about an 82% chance that they will. And I kind of agree with that because this Fed in particular has to show that it is apolitical, particularly with the surprise Trump win. And he's been very vocal about the fact that he wants to dismantle it. Trump is being touted as the inflation president. And there's a lot of pundits out there that think inflation is going to rise and that rates are going to rise with that. We're seeing that kind of reaction in the markets with the dollar hitting record levels as well against competitive currencies.
And perhaps not that bad a move at this particular time when the market's so high.
The Fed has been very clear and telegraphing their intentions that they were very economic data dependent. At the end of the day, data is as good as it has been since the financial crisis. In fact, retail spending, according to the National Federation of Retailers, they expect us to spend about 3.6% this holiday season. That's higher than the 10-year average of 2.5%. So consumer spending's improving, employment data's improving, we're starting to see wage growth, and that is exactly what the Fed has been dependent upon. There really is no excuse for them not to raise rates. And at the end of the day, it's only 25 basis points.
We always rotate our interest toward New York when it comes to all things financial. Jill Malandrino is there. Thank you, Jill.
All right. Thank you.
Well, as the markets ebb and flow and all the stories continue to flow and develop, you can follow them at our website, voanews.com, and be sure to check out our Twitter feed at @VOA_IE and on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. Growing your own food has always been one of the simplest ways to know exactly what you're eating. From window boxes to full-blown victory gardens, growing and cooking your own food can be satisfying and healthy. But what if you could grow healthy, edible plant cells at home without going to the trouble of planting a garden? VOA's Kevin Enochs helps answer that question.
Finnish scientists have figured out how to grow plant cells inside this little incubator.
Instead of using the complete plant as food, growing it on the field, we're taking only one part of it, only the cell culture, and growing them in a bioreactor at home. So what basically allows you to do is to grow your own food in your own kitchen. And these cell cultures, they contain pretty much the same nutritional values as the original plant would.
This is the result. It doesn't look very appetizing, and the researchers admit they need to work on the taste, but it is a quick way to get a healthy dose of antioxidants and vitamins.
We're not going to replace fields with this technology, obviously. But there's a lot of special plants that are either hard to get or cannot be produced in a sustainable way. So what we enable the customer to do is to grow some of that fresh plant food, maybe from some exotic source like Arctic Nordic berries, but are not really available in other ways.
All consumers will need to do is add the ingredients, sit back and wait.
Yeah, it's this seed culture. It comes like a coffee capsule. You put it in the device and give it some water, and the machine does the rest. It gives it light, heat, and all the conditions it needs to grow into a mass of plant cells.
This is an early prototype, but the researchers hope to have a version of the cell pod on the market in the next 10 years. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us at our website any time of the day or night at voanews.com. Listen to our program, stream it, download it, and take it with you. Like us on Facebook as well, and follow us on Twitter. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Dave Magnus. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Much has changed in Afghanistan since U.S.-led forces helped topple the Taliban regime 15 years ago, said Secretary of State John Kerry at a recent conference on Afghanistan.
Since 2001, maternal mortality in childbirth in Afghanistan has gone down by 75%. Average life expectancy has risen from 42 years to 62 years. Access to basic health care has skyrocketed from 9% to 67%. In 2001, there was only one television station, and it was owned by the government. Now there are 75 stations, and all but two are privately owned. Back then, there were virtually no cell phones, zero. Today, there are 18 million cell phones covering about 90% of residential areas connecting Afghans to the world.
Nonetheless, despite many positive changes, the government and people of Afghanistan are still facing the same foe. Today, the Taliban are again trying to test the Afghan government's resolve, and Afghan forces continue to bravely repel these challenges, said Secretary of State Kerry. There is only one way to end this conflict, and that is through a political settlement negotiated between Taliban fighters and the Afghan government, said Secretary of State Kerry. Only through peace will Afghanistan achieve lasting stability and ultimately a full drawdown of international military forces. And the world community fully recognizes what is at stake, he said. That is why some 70 countries, including the United States, have pledged a total of $15.2 billion to support Afghanistan through the year 2020. This international support, said President Ghani, will not only help the Afghan government defeat the Taliban insurgency, but also expand its economy, fight corruption, and support human rights. The United States, said Secretary of State Kerry, pledges to deepen our strategic partnership with Afghanistan and to work with Congress to provide civilian assistance at or very near the current levels, on average, all the way through 2020. That is our financial commitment. And we expect to continue a significant, though gradually declining, level of support as Afghanistan later becomes more self-reliant through the end of the transformation decade.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.